All right, my friends. So, I think I told you probably last time I was here at the beginning of July, if you were here, that I've been thinking about and practicing with and teaching about belonging. It's a very interesting topic to me, belonging this year. And I'm in part going from Sebane Selassie's book called You Belong. If you're interested in this topic at all, you should get the book. It's really excellent. And so belonging, I'm not talking about the kind of belonging, like which club you belong to or who's the cool person or who belongs or which political party or who doesn't belong or who's good enough and who's not, like that kind of hierarchy. I'm not really talking about that kind of belonging. So there's no boundaries between who belongs and who doesn't in this kind of belonging. It's this kind of belonging where we are not separate from the whole thing, right? Like the whole shenanigans. It sounds shenanigans. Do you have shenanigans in your life, right? Like things go up, things go down. Sometimes we feel deeply held and like we belong. And other times we feel completely lost and disconnected and separate. And even so, we belong. We belong to the whole thing. We belong to each other. I belong to you and you belong to me. It's this kind of belonging where we are completely ourselves and all parts of you are welcome. Like whatever you are tonight, lonely, enraged, depressed, joyful, peaceful, all of it, that you are welcome here. This kind of belonging that is inclusive of everyone and everything. Because the thing is, that is how this world works. This universe works, right? We're not separate. I'm here with you because Jack Kornfield was born and went to Asia in the late 60s, early 70s, probably late 60s, right? And that there were people in Asia that he could study with, and that they had studied with their teachers all the way back to the time of the Buddha and even before that, right? Like the whole world is right here with us in our community. Like your ancestors, my ancestors, really the entire ancestry of the human race is right here. And the oxygen, which comes from the ocean and the trees are here, and the internet, and whoever thought of the internet. I mean, it's all here. Like, we belong to all of it. So then the question begins to me to be how do we remember that? Because it's easy to feel disconnected and lost, and like, I don't know, we got to put up the good fight or something. So, belonging as an interconnectedness in opposition to forces of oppression and domination, the forces that separate us, that create a global hierarchy, the forces that create a hierarchy in our mind of who belongs and who doesn't belong. Belonging, interconnectedness in opposition to competition and rampant consumerism. So belonging as a process, I would even say belonging as an ongoing practice. It's something we do. It's like this really, it's a paradox. It's this thing where it's something that we do, and at the same time, you are nothing but belonging, that you are here. Because you're here, you belong. It couldn't be otherwise. So belonging as an ongoing process and practice. I've been studying with this teacher, and she's been talking about recently how the jewel, right, the gift is actually in the process. It's not in the outcome, it's in the process of unfolding. So, meaning belonging isn't a fixed state that you can get to. It's not a place like, say, where I am, 24300 Ramsey Ridge Road. And I know when I've arrived, I've entered the gate of the property and I've arrived and then I leave and it's clear. It's not like that. It's not a fixed state. It's an unfolding. It's more like the creek. Like the creek, it's running year round. Like the water, if it's a creek that runs year round, the water comes, right? Like the water comes by and then it goes eventually to the ocean and it goes into the ocean and then it evaporates out of the ocean and then it goes into a cloud and then it rains down and makes it back into the creek, right? Like it's just this process of unfolding that's belonging, that's held, that's part of, not separate from all of it. So we can, even if we follow the creek to the ocean, there's still no end point because then it turns, back into the, right? There's no end point. It's this process. So part of our belonging is a sense of context, right? Like the context. What is your context? Meaning that you're not separate from your context. Right? Your childhood conditioning, your cultural conditioning, your ancestors, the lineage that we're here practicing together, the context. There's so much context here. It includes the whole of human history, your personal genetics, what you did today, how much sleep you got last night, right? Like your context. There's so much context. I love Zoom. So there's I kind of hate it too. It's a love-hate relationship for sure. But one of the beautiful, beautiful things about it, there's a lot of beautiful things about it, but one of them is I get to see a little bit of your context. If you turn the camera on and you can see a little bit of my context. You know what my couch is like. I sit on this couch every night. That's my context, right? And I get to see a little, and sometimes I get to see people's pets. So that's like the context that is the question of belonging, right? The context is part of it. And we can, as part of our practice, honor the ancestors of place. Right, the ancestors of place, the ancestors of lineage, our little ancestors. So we feel that we don't belong, and the mystery is that we do. We can't be anything else than a part of it all. So loneliness and isolation, anxiety and depression, the feeling that something's not quite right. And that we are not enough, that we don't fit in, that we're not cool enough, that we don't measure up. We might think we need to improve ourselves a little bit. This is a fundamental misunderstanding because the thing is, we belong. Desmond Tutu said, "We are because we belong. We are, you are because you belong." So, how do we heal that sense of not belonging, that misunderstanding, that ignorance, really? Oh, another way to say that is how do we engage in the ongoing process and practice of belonging? So I'm again not talking about a fixed end state, but this process and practice. So it's not a one and done. It's like I teach yoga. I've been teaching yoga for 25 years, and it's not like you do yoga once and then you're done, or you meditate once and you're done. It's not a one and done. It's an ongoing, it's a process, an unfolding. So we've all lost in some ways that inherent interconnection, in particular, our belonging to nature. Our connections to history, we might have lost. We might have lost our connections to place through migration. So we can practice belonging to ourselves and belonging to everything else. So it's actually good news. It's also bad news. It's both. It's good news and bad news. We belong to all of it, right? We belong to the hard parts too. So we want to feel a sense of belonging and we long for connection. Maybe you do. I don't know if you do. I know I do. I long for a sense of connection and long for a sense of belonging until it brings us into contact with something that we don't like, that's not our preference, that we think should be different, or we judge. So the question then becomes also, how do we stay with all of the difficulties? How do we belong to ourselves, even the parts of ourselves we don't like too much? How do we belong to this world? There's a lot of stuff going on in the world that's horrible, and we belong to it. It's part of us. It's not separate. So how do we stay with these difficulties? So we are in some ways inescapably entangled within the systems of domination and oppression. These systems live within us. The patterns and conditionings live in all of us. So it in some ways behooves us, that's a good word, right? It behooves us to do a practice, right? To start to belong to ourselves so that we can belong to the world. So Sebane, in her book, she gives each chapter different things, different practices and processes to work with for belonging. And the first section she talks about, the first one is to ground yourself. All of it happens in the body, right? Belonging to the body itself, which is, by the way, the first foundation of mindfulness, right? That cornerstone of mindfulness. So then she goes on to talk about knowing yourself and that it's a practice in loving yourself and connecting yourself and being yourself. But tonight, I'd like to focus for the remainder of the talk a bit on mindfulness of the body or belonging to the body as a process. So, do you all know the James Joyce quote, Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body, right? Maybe you can relate to that, right? Mr. Duffy lived a short distance from his body. And so, we spend huge amounts of time kind of in our minds, in a kind of virtual reality. We're thinking about the future, remembering the past. It's like we're in some ways giving our attention away to the future, right? Where life happens right here in the moment through the body, and we're spending so much time worrying about the future or remembering the past, going over things. And we're not actually awake right here in our senses. But in fact, pretty much everything we most value is right here in the body. Love, it's right here in the body. To cultivate wisdom, we have to be here directly to contact creativity, to contact our own capacity to be wise. Creativity comes through the body. The things we most value have to be here in the body. So you could think of the path, the process of awakening, the process of meditation, the process of the cultivation of wisdom and compassion. You could think about it as a pathway to full embodiment. So this is, like I said, the first foundation of mindfulness. Everything else arises out of our capacity to be at home and awake in this body, to love life, to live life, to be here fully. Because the thing is, while we are not the body, we would not be here without the body. So it's this place, it's the location for our love to be expressed. It's the location for our wisdom to be expressed. It's the location where we can learn that we are deeply connected. I take in food and water, that's the environment, and it turns into me in some sort of mysterious, miraculous way. And then I poop and pee, and it's right, it goes back into the earth, right? Like this really kind of amazing thing about the body. So the entirety of the Dharma. So Dharma, this word Dharma, which you probably know, means the teachings and the practices. I love that it's both the teachings and the practices. So the entirety of the Dharma, the entirety of the teachings and the practice are in the body. Right there. We can see suffering in the body. We can see the cause of suffering. And we can see the end of suffering and the path to the end of suffering through the body. So your body, my body, our bodies know how to sing, how to dance, how to heal, how to die. We know how to mourn. We know how to celebrate. The problem is that we forget and leave our bodies all the time. So from John O'Donohue, he said, "Our bodies know they belong. It is our minds that make our lives so homeless." I'm going to say that again. Our bodies know that they belong. It is our minds that make our lives so homeless. Okay. So this, I don't mean it to turn into, it sounds like a little bit like it is, but I don't mean it to turn into a diatribe against thought. You know, the thinking mind is amazing. It's part of, right? It's part of the thing that we belong to, this amazing mind. Thoughts allow many amazing things, and it's a part of our spiritual life, and it's a part of wise contemplation. Like without the mind, it would be hard to function. So we need the mind. But the problem happens when we live disconnected from intuition and from the wisdom of the body and let the mind have dominance and prominence. Right? So the mind is, in some ways, it creates the conditions for us to disconnect. So we are practicing with our meditation. I've been thinking this week, this is not written down in my talk, but I have been thinking about this week. I heard somebody say, I was listening to something, and she was talking about how she had had a serious cancer diagnosis and like terminal diagnosis. And she said that it clarified everything for her. And so much stuff dropped away because she realized it wasn't important. And what was important was her relationships and being present for the time that she had left. And she said, "I can see it on people. I can see the future. Like we're like giving ourselves away to the future." I just, how she said that was really interesting to me, like giving ourselves away to the future. Right, like that sense of the mind taking us forward. So even in our meditation practice, we might see that, like, oh, I'm trying to be a better meditator. I don't know. Even after all these years, I wish that I could be a better meditator, right? And I can just know that and love that part of myself too. Like we can love all the parts of ourselves and just see them clearly because they are part of us. Remember, this is about belonging to ourself and all the parts of ourselves, the beautiful parts and the squirrely weird inner, maybe you don't have any weird squirrely inner parts, but right, like all of those, all of it, belonging to all of it. So we're practicing sacred presence with our mindfulness. It's not about next year when you get to be awake after you've meditated enough. It's right in the meditation, full embodiment, the embodiment of wisdom and love, so that they become more than just ideas. They're actually like a felt sense. So historically and archetypically, people would go out into the wilderness to practice in the elements. And the story of the Buddha, the night of the Buddha's awakening, he's meditated under a tree. There's so many stories about being meditating in the forest or being in the under a tree. So we don't actually do that so much anymore. But we do have the four elements in our body. Now, I don't mean elements like oxygen and hydrogen and carbon, not like those kind of scientific elements. I mean the elements of our experience, which we can see in the world. So I can look outside and see the creek, and it's water. And I have water in my body too. Scientifically, I'm 60% water, so the element water. Or the element air, right? I breathe, you breathe, we're breathing in and out. And that oxygen goes into our veins, it goes into our blood. So, the element of air. So, we have the wilderness, we have nature right here in the body. That's kind of amazing. So, maybe we don't go out and meditate under a tree until we wake up. Maybe you do. I find that inspiring. But, you know, we also sit inside a lot. But we do have that ultimately, we do have the wildness of the body, the wilderness of the body. So, four elements as a part of our body. So, we're practicing belonging and we're learning how to reconnect. waking up in this embodiment. So maybe right now you can notice, what is your sense of your body? Oh, I was leaning forward to you, right? Like, what is your sense of being in your body just right now? It's patterns of sensation. You might be able to feel your tushy resting down. You might even rest a little bit more if you've got a backrest into the chair, or if you're sitting on the floor without a backrest, let your weight come into your sits bones more. It's so helpful if you have anxiety. Anybody here have anxiety? It's an epidemic, I think. So helpful to bring the thoughts will be up and out, to bring those up and out thoughts down and in, feeling those places of contact, pressure. Can you feel any part of your body right now that's got some contact and pressure? This is the element of your experience that's earth, that's steady. So, do you own your body as an object? Or can you feel it from the inside? Can you feel your feet, your hands, your arms, your legs? Patterns of tension, patterns of ease. So, I grew up doing dance. And I think I was taught, and I think if you ever did dance or gymnastics, or maybe just were a human being in the United States, if you grew up in the United States, you might have gotten the message that we need to control the body. We need to manage the body. It needs to look a certain way, perform a certain way, be looking a certain way, right? Like all this sort of like an object, like it's something that we can dominate the body. So interesting. I was talking to a friend last weekend about, she teaches Qigong, and we were talking about under-efforting in a Qigong practice. And I was like, oh, that's beautiful for yoga too. Because I see people come to yoga and there's so much like domination and control of the body rather than being with the body, feeling the body from the inside rather than viewing it from the outside as an object. Now, this is a process. This is a kind of unlearning that can take a long time. The process of being in the body from the inside. I hope that makes sense to you. I feel like when I first started doing yoga at Spirit Rock, Ann Cushman, she used to, and some of you might have had her yoga class before. I mean, this was decades ago. She used to say, feel your body. And I feel like that would instruction would drive me crazy. I'm like, what are you talking about? Feel my body. But at any rate, like feeling, like you could do this right now. You could squeeze your hand and look at it, and you're seeing your body, but feeling it from the inside, the actual visceral sensation, this inhabiting ourselves from the inside. It's tricky though. The body gets pain. Does your body have pain sometimes, right? Or it doesn't get enough sleep, or it gets sick, right? And then we get to practice compassion and love for ourselves, right? The body as doorway to the development of wisdom and compassion. The body lives in the present moment and the mind doesn't always. We often might be living as if the mind had a mental control tower and we leave the body. Sometimes I love to look at little children, like little toddlers. They to me look so embodied, or like a dog when it's happy and its butt is really wagging, right? So embodied. Or my cat when I'm petting it. Just right, like the whole thing, like there's that connection, that embodiment. So when we're out of our body, it's a disconnection to the nature that is the nature around us and the nature that is us. It's a disconnect when we're out of the body. It's a loss of intimacy, and we become removed from our own natural rhythms. Okay, so from Reggie Ray. To approach the world, Reggie Ray is a Western man, and he's a Tibetan Buddhist teacher. He said, this is in his book called Touching, I think it's called Touching Awakening or Touching Enlightenment or something. He says, to approach the world by objectifying it, to reside mainly in the head, is to put ourselves in a position of domination, mastery, and control. We domesticate the world by filtering it through our concepts, and this enables us to own and possess it, to make it subservient to our agendas and wants. Okay, I'm going to read that again because my mind sometimes wanders when people are reading things. Okay, so to approach the world by objectifying it, to reside mainly in the head, is to put ourselves in a position of domination, mastery, and control. We domesticate the world by filtering it through our concepts, and this enables us to own and possess it, to make it subservient to our agendas and wants. So, when we sit down to practice mindfulness of the body, when we sit down to meditate, when we sit down to cultivate wisdom and compassion, when we come together as a community, whether on Zoom or in person. So we're gradually shedding a multitude of opinions built upon opinions of how things are and how they should be. And practicing more and more, coming into contact more embodied into the literal non-conceptual experience of being a human being. Coming into contact with the deeply connected worlds. Coming into contact with our inherent belonging, belonging to all of it. So it's not our meditation, surprisingly enough, as much as we might wish it to be, about always controlling or maintaining a pleasant experience. That is impossible and a little odd because of change, right? Everything's changing. If everything were the same, then maybe you could get a pleasant experience and hold on to it. But that's like trying to hold a butterfly. So our meditation's not about trying to control or maintain. We're actually practicing being with ourselves. So that instruction, if it's difficult or unpleasant, I say this so many times because I need to learn it too. If it's difficult, if it's painful, unpleasant, like how can we support ourselves? Like, oh, sweetheart, here we go. It's 2 a.m. It's 3 a.m. It's 4 a.m. How do we support ourselves in that? Or when we're ill? Or when something's not how we would prefer, can we practice being with ourselves then with care and compassion? So it's real. It's real, right? It's not whitewashed or packaged for consumption. It's real with real depth. So I love this. It's from the Mahayana, so it's from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, this mantra, which you probably have heard. Om Gate Gate Paragate Parasamgate Bodhisvaha. Om Gate Gate Paragate Parasamgate Bodhisvaha. So there's a bunch of different translations of this. The Dalai Lama, one of his translations is go as an instruction, right? Go, go, go beyond, go completely beyond and rest. Rest in your true nature. It comes from a teaching that says form is empty, emptiness is form. So you have to remember that emptiness is a technical Buddhist term meaning empty of a separate, disconnected anything. So form, your body, is empty. It's empty of being disconnect, right? It's can oh boy, too many double negatives, but here we go. Form is empty. Emptiness is form. Emptiness is not other than form. Form is not other than emptiness. So here we are, our beautiful human hearts and our beautiful human bodies, connected to each other, the Dharma showing up in the body. All right, my friends, that's what I have for us. I have some questions. Oh, I don't know if they're very good. But so I'd love to hear from you all. Every time I get to hear from you all, I learn so much and we can really support each other. So how connected are you to your body? What do you know about mindfulness of the body? Do you have any observations about this practice of belonging to your body? That's what I have. So yeah, Bowman, please.
Yeah, thanks, Ashley. Very good talk. Thanks. Today I really got connected with my body. I was outside doing some yard work, and it was hot here and humid, and I was sweating through my t-shirt, and I was but I was really in the woods. I was in the moment and really being with what I was doing and really felt my body. I really felt it. It was really and to the point where I realized, oh, I need to get some more hydration and sit down. So I got into it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Yeah, it's real, right? Like that when we connect, sometimes we need hydration. One time somebody was telling me that she felt like this process of embodiment to her felt really good, even though it would be painful sometimes, because it felt real and connected. So I thought that was interesting. Marion, you have your hand raised.
Okay. Well, I feel like you wrote this or did this, spoke this whole thing for me. I've been in extreme pain for 30 years, constantly, always. And it's the, I don't know, I do know a few other people, but it's, first of all, it's a very isolating kind of experience. So the whole first part of your talk was so helpful. It's just really wonderful. And I have been working, I'd say the last 10 years, maybe intensely on loving, or even putting, not just love in my body, that's another 10 years off. But just not hating parts. And the different, the disease is very weird and it doesn't feel like any other. It's, the neurons, the autonomic nervous system, it is a different feeling than any other pain because I've had lots of other pains. And it feels like the nerves are being sandpapered or what? This other, but I don't want to think about it. And What I wanted to show you, I go to these enormous extremes to get a little pain relief so I can go out of the house. And I spend lots of creative hours coming up with ways to have less pain. And I wanted to show you my latest. If you can see it, I don't. I was doing some of it while you were speaking because I really do want to get out and get a little daylight. And I can't go out unless I'm all padded and encased in softness to buffer the pain. So I don't know if you could see that. I want to show you my feet, not my feet, but what I have on my feet.
Yeah,
And I'm not
please.
sure if you could see it, but I've never done this any. Okay.
Wait, I can almost see, almost see. Yeah.
At the
Yeah.
bottom, and you can't really see the top. I
Does it
have
have like,
lamb's wool.
okay. Yeah.
I don't
Yeah.
know.
I see. Yeah. I can see a little bit.
It's this big, fluffy, every toe has lamb's wool, and each toe is wrapped and
Yeah.
tied with yarn. And the bottom too, which and I'm not, I can't use tape because tape hurts. So
Oh my goodness.
anyway, it's quite a process.
Yeah.
That I'm sorry. I bet this is the weirdest comment anybody.
No, thank you for sharing. It's nice to hear what's happening for you and also for us to hear that there are people, because you mentioned that it's isolating to be pained like that. Like that's, I feel like it's so brave that you're sharing your process, like how you're caring for yourself so you can get out and that's working on not hating. Like this is beautiful. This is beautiful work.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Theta.
We're running late. I'm going to pass and let Zoe talk, but thank you.
Okay. Zoe.
Oh, this was a real synchronous talk for me, Ashley, because I'm about to. In about a week, switch to another position at work where I will no longer be out and among a lot of people with a lot of busyness and a lot of activity and a lot of communication and connection that I really like, to a much more sedate, analytical, remote position where I'm going to be by myself a lot. And so your reminder was so pertinent to return to the body because I'm already in the future self worrying about being lonely and disconnected and feeling, like I don't know what I'm doing here by myself. I'm going to be transitioning to the same work location, but in an office all by myself, kind of isolated from everyone else on that was on my team. And that's going to be weird for a while for me. And then eventually, hopefully, working from home. So it's interesting how we project a lot of things onto our minds that if we could just kind of stay with the body, maybe it would go better. And so that was a really beautiful reminder for me to that's my homework coming up.
Yeah,
If that
I'm
makes
thinking
sense.
it does make sense. And I'm thinking something like really, as you start this new work, keep coming back to your body because your body will tell you, like, oh, too much isolation. I need to stand up and look out the window, or I need to like take some water, or I need to text a friend, right? Like your body will help you with that as you make the transition. Yeah. Yeah. Thank
Thank you.
you. And then last one, Deborah, and then we'll do Metta.
Mindful also of the time, I just want to say what Vita said. This was a very synchronous talk today. After listening to a neurologist talk about the inner activities of our body and how everything is connected, and I just loved the way you talked about the outside being our insides. The air, the water, the earth element, our grounding. And I wanted to say thank you for that. It was so pertinent. And I think probably one of my biggest practices is to try to remember as many times a day to be in my body. And to, you know, what are my feet doing? What's, where am I balanced? What is my spine doing? Am I breathing? There are times when I think I'm not even breathing. So this was really wonderful. So once more, thank you, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Deborah. Me too. Like, me too. Mindfulness of the body. Yeah.